If you see me yawning a lot, which may happen, I was at father-son camp all weekend. They worked us pretty hard and didn't let us sleep very much, so it's not that I'm bored, just tired. So we're tackling Nehemiah chapters 5 through 7 today, and I'm going to start off with a story. And if you are an avid 60 Minutes watcher, you might know this story a little bit. This story was on 2 years ago. This is a guy named Fred Miller. And Fred Miller, he was in the Air Force. He actually lived in California. But he would visit his family in North Carolina very often. Like a couple of months out of the year, he would go and visit. But he'd always be hopping around hotels or staying with family or whatever. He's like, it'd be really great if I just had somewhere to go to live when I went to visit, and that family could stay there with me together. And so he was kind of just keeping his eye open, and someone says, hey, there's this house that came up for sale, and it was called the Sharswood property. It had been around for a very, very long time. And their initial fear was that it would be too hard to buy. It would be too expensive. But the price was in his range. He made an offer. It was accepted. And then somebody did some digging and found out that they had lived on this property before. So not they themselves, but people in their family had lived on this property before. The only issue was, while they lived in this house now, this was their house when their family lived there in the 1850s and 60s. This was the slave dwellings. So they'd go in there and be like, oh, this is where great-great-grandma lived. And they actually dug up and did all the research, and they found pictures, photographs taken. They were like, okay, this is great-great-grandma. She was never actually a slave here, but her older brother was. So it was just like right at the cusp of emancipation. But it was like their family used to live on the property. They worked the property. They made the property beautiful. They helped with that house, and now they get to live in it, and now they own it and call it their own. So, just a little illustration of what happens when people come back home, because that's what's happening in Nehemiah. So far in the book of Nehemiah, we have seen Nehemiah come to Jerusalem for the purpose of rebuilding. His family was from Jerusalem, but he was not. He wasn't born there, he wasn't raised there, but he's coming back home. Before he makes the journey, he prays. And we kind of learned an outline of how he prays. And if you listen to the Lord's Prayer, this is about the same outline. He praises God. He repents. He asks. And then he yields to God's will. Then when he gets there, he immediately meets opposition to his work, and then he calls out in prayer again. A prayer of defense for God to protect the Israelites while they are rebuilding Jerusalem. And God does. They are equipped to defend themselves, and they don't get attacked. So God was with them. And we'll see more and more opposition, and the more opposition Nehemiah has come up with, the more he prays. We will also see what happens when we live in the will of God, when we yield to God's will. And one of the things you may notice if you've been reading through the book of Nehemiah with me is that he seems to be giving a narrative report of what's going on. And that's partly true. But if you're reading the book of Nehemiah as a prayer, as his prayer to God, as his report to God of what's going on, I think that's more accurate. Just listen to how Nehemiah describes how he is the governor of Jerusalem. This is from Nehemiah chapter 5, verses 14 to 19. And he says, moreover, from the time I was appointed to be their governor in the land of Judah, from the 20th year to the 32nd year of Artaxerxes the king, 12 years, neither I nor my brothers ate the food allowance of the governor. The former governors who were before me laid heavy burdens on the people and took from their daily ration 40 shekels of silver. Even their servant lorded it over the people, but I did not do so because of the fear of God. I also persevered in the work on this wall, and we acquired no land, and all my servants were gathered there for the work. Moreover, there were at my table 150 men, Jews and officials, besides those who came from us from the nations that were around us. Now what was prepared at my expense for each day was one ox and six choice sheep and birds, and every 10 days all kinds of wine in abundance. Yet for all this I did not demand the food allowance of the governor, because the service was too heavy on the people. And this is how we tell it's a prayer. Remember for my good, O my God, that all that I have done for this people. This could be simply read as a chronicle, but I believe firmly here Nehemiah is addressing God and reporting to him what he is doing with his life. And Nehemiah doesn't need to tell God what's going on. God knows what's going on. He knows the decisions Nehemiah is making. Just like we don't have to tell God about our day or our struggles. He knows about our day and our struggles. But he delights in our prayer. He doesn't delight in us doing the wrong thing and asking for forgiveness. He delights in us doing the right thing and talking to him about it. He delights when we bring him our struggles. And just like Proverbs 15:8 says, it talks about the wicked and the righteous. It says, the sacrifice of the wicked is an abomination to the Lord, but the prayer of the upright is acceptable to him. Meaning if we just do this church thing, give money and time to look good, then we look worse to God. But the prayer of the upright is acceptable. He wants to hear how you're doing. He wants to hear your struggles and your joy. Not because he doesn't know them, because he does, but because he's in relationship with you and he wants to be in communication with you. And not because of what you've done. Nehemiah's doing a whole lot of stuff here, but it's God working through Nehemiah. And it's for what God can do through you. Nehemiah didn't take the food allowance because he didn't want to put a burden on the people. So he paid for it out of his own pay, his own pocket. He wanted God to sustain him, and God did. This building has been used by the church for many years. 16 years this April. And while it's been your home, it's not been your property. Until now. The place you have lived for over a decade will now be your property. The place where you came to serve will now be the place where you send out to serve. Fred Miller, this is his sister, by the way, not his wife, had no idea that his ancestors had called the house he bought home. But it had never been theirs. It was just a place they were. Now today the family owns what they once took care of but never owned. They even found the graveyard where their ancestors were buried. This building will be yours. And how will you serve the people who see this building? Will it be a beacon to those who have no home? Will it be a guarded hideout? Will it be a station where people come and go, leaving with more than they came with? That's up to you, the congregation, and the leaders of this church. Nehemiah was a good governor. He cared for the people. He cared for their needs. And when he was about done with the wall, as Scripture says, the wall was done, but the doors weren't installed yet. Nehemiah met opposition again. Remember these guys from Superbook? Sanballat, Tobiah, and another guy named Geshem. They're all up in his face again. They have this idea that they can call Nehemiah away from Jerusalem, and if Nehemiah is not there, then they can attack. That's their idea. Nehemiah's not falling for it, though. He's not leaving, and when people are trying to instill fear in him, what do you think he does?
He refuses.
No, he prays. That's his go-to. Now, when I went into the house of Shemaiah, the son of Deliah, son of even I have struggles with some of these names sometimes, who was confined to his home, he says, let us meet in the house of God within the temple. Let us close the doors of the temple, for they're coming to kill you. They are coming to kill you by night. But I said, should such a man as I run away? And what man such as I could go into the temple and live? I will not go in. And I understood and saw that God had not sent him, but he had pronounced the prophecy against me because Tobiah and Sanballat had hired him. For this purpose he was hired, that I should be afraid. Afraid. And act in this way and sin. And so they could give me a bad name in order to taunt me. Here's the prayer. God, remember Tobiah and Sanballat. Oh my God, according to these things that they did, and also the prophetess, Noadiah, and the rest of the prophets who wanted to make me afraid. Who was the prophetess that lied? No idea. I just realized that now. Nehemiah was not afraid because God was with him, and Nehemiah was doing what God told him. Nehemiah was not afraid. Nothing could hold him back because he was walking in God's will. There was nothing could stop him. Sanballat and Tobiah couldn't stop him. Opposition couldn't stop him. If Artaxerxes suddenly changed his mind and decided he wanted to tear the wall down, I don't even think that would have stopped Nehemiah. Because he was walking in God's will. He never once gives credit to Artaxerxes, who sent him there and is funding this whole expedition. He only gives credit and glory to God. Nothing would stop him. So my encouragement to you, don't let the world stop you from sharing the gospel. I'm 100% honest here. I am a shy person. I do not like being in great big crowds of people I don't know. I just had to spend a weekend with a bunch of dads and a bunch of sons that I didn't know, and I wanted to be in the corner by the wood stove handling the PowerPoint. So guess what I did? I handled the PowerPoint all weekend. But that was only during worship. The rest of the time I had to sit with everybody and interact with everybody. I don't like talking to people I don't know. I have a hard time with it. I have a hard time starting conversations with people I don't know because I am held back by fear. But do you know what happens every time I step forward in faith and do the scary thing I don't want to do? I stop being afraid. The moment I take that step. Last Halloween, day before Halloween, here at this building, we went out into this building over to the trailer park to hand out invitations. I didn't want to go. I was hoping for a way out of it. I wanted my wife to be like, hey, why don't you just stay here with a baby while I go out? I was like, yes, please do that. Didn't happen. The moment I stepped out the door and started walking, the fear melted away. Fear is the enemy's weapon to prevent the gospel being preached. So don't let fear rule you. Nehemiah didn't, and he had way more opposition than being scared of people at a trailer park. He stepped forward Jerusalem stayed safe. So that covers chapter 5 and 6. Chapter 7 is a long list of names of those who, of the returned exiles. The estimated total is about 50,000 people, but they often leave out children and then sometimes women. So maybe 70,000 if we're counting them, children. The population of Klamath County is about 70,000 people. That's 70,000 people that need the gospel. Don't worry, I'm not putting that all on your shoulders. And you're wondering, Pastor, some of those 70,000 are Christians, right? Yes. And if every person in Klamath County was a Christian, I would still say 70,000 people that need the gospel. Because I need the gospel. You need the gospel. Our neighbors in the trailer park need the gospel. Everyone needs the gospel, whether they've accepted it or not. Romans 1, 11 to 12, Paul's saying, "For I long to see you," he's talking to Roman Christians, "that I may impart to you some sort of spiritual gift to strengthen you. That is, that we may be mutually encouraged by each other's faith, both yours and mine." Paul's writing this to Christians in Rome, people who are believers. He wants them to share the gospel. Not because they need to accept it, but because we need to know it so that we can share it so that others may accept it. And there are many people in the world who live for themselves. Sanballat and Tobiah and their friends were all about themselves. They weren't getting the attention. They weren't getting the funding from the king. Nehemiah was, so they were against Nehemiah. Nehemiah was all about God. He walked in God's will. And from the context of the letter of Nehemiah, he prayed all the time. So that's my closing encouragement, is pray all the time. Pray that you may know God's will and shed the fear the enemy has wrapped you in. Because fear is a liar, and we don't need to listen. And when we walk away from that fear, it goes away. So I'm going to close tonight again with a song. And then I'll pray for our food. But remember, Nehemiah didn't fear because he had God.